This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob.
And hello and welcome to Talking.Golf. Rob Hernandez here, joined by, drumroll please, the low net champion from the Golf Writers Association of America Championship over the weekend down in Florida, the one, the only, Gary D'Amato. Gary, it's just like riding a bike, my friend. You know, how can a northern golf writer go in there and beat all those southerners? What did you do? How did you get it done?
Rob, I don't know that anyone cares all that much, but I will preface it by saying there were only 28 entries in the tournament, so it wasn't like I beat a field of 160 guys, unfortunately.
Average age is what? About 75? Or what are we at now with the Golf Writers Championship? who do we got? Do we got any young stars coming up? Any Colin Morikawas of the Pennant Scroll?
Our good friend Chuck Garbedian plays second in the Gross. I think Chuck saw like 78, 77 maybe, and finished second. Gary Sickle, who our listeners are familiar with, I think Gary finished third, I believe, so in Low Gross. So, yeah, it was fun. You know, that the Innisbrook Resort is a really cool place for four golf courses, and of course everyone knows the Copperhead, where the Valspar Championship is played with the Snake Pit, the final three holes. Which I played, by the way, par bogey. That's the only thing I'll break. Yeah. So it was fun.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Garbedian played, huh? So it was a ringer event.
it was. He was the ringer, but Kevin Frisch, our good friend from Michigan, was the champion. I think Kevin shot 77-75. Pretty good play.
And you're right, a good guy. And all those guys you mentioned, you know, have done a lot for golf in our part of the country in terms of what they've written. Kevin with, you know, the courses that he represents up there. And of course, you know, Chuck with his radio show. It sounds like a good time was had by all. On top of the fact that you were down there for the PGA Merchandise Show, which in and of itself is a fun time, an overwhelming time, isn't it, Gary?
It is, Rob. Yeah, I'm like a kid in a candy store when I go down there to the Orange County Convention Center in Orlando. Demo day, Rob, was a little tough. It was probably, I'm going to say it was 48, 50 degrees and howling wind. But they still had a turnout of about 7,000 people, I believe, for demo day, which is basically all PGA professionals looking at all the newest equipment and testing it. And then the next 3 days, the show itself in the Orange County Convention Center is really cool. It's where all the companies unveil their new stuff for 2020. I must have seen 40 CBD booths, Rob. That seems to be the hot thing right now, is CBD. Whether it's effective or not, I mean, some guys swear by it and some guys say it doesn't do anything for them or to them. So I'm not sure. But CBD was everywhere, and golf simulators. It seems like there's dozens of companies in the marketplace making simulators now. Those seem to be the prevalent things on the showroom floor.
Well, and you know, even you know, down in San Diego at the Farmers, I mean, CBD is clearly part of the game, especially for, you know, I mean, why don't you tell our listeners why it's become this phenomena? You know, who do you think is the, you know, I mean, you know, who do we look to as kind of, you know, bearing the torch for what CBD can do for your golf game?
Yeah, you know, Rob, on the Champions Tour, it's Scott McCarron, who pretty good torchbearer since he was, since he had such a great year last year and edged out Jerry Kelly for all, basically most of the postseason awards and the Schwab Cup. Scott swears by it, says that he was a terrible sleeper before he started using CBD, and now he sleeps like a baby 8 hours a night. It affects all guys differently. Some guys that use it, Rob, for inflammation, some guys use it for sleep, and some guys claim that it helps their focus and concentration a little bit. You know, Scott Piercy is probably the trendsetter on the PGA Tour. I think, you know, the Champions Tour, there's a lot of guys using it. The PGA Tour guys are still holding it at arm's length, and I think there's still a tiny bit of concern that, you know, there's trace amounts of THC in some of these CBD products, and I think some guys are worried about, you know, a random drug test and showing a very trace amount of THC, which is the active ingredient in marijuana. So there's a lot of stuff we still have to learn about this, I think.
Any fun devices that you saw, fun gadgets that you know, on the showroom floor?
Yeah, I wrote about one of the things that really caught my eye, Rob, and it would be so good for a college program. And it was this 7x17 foot putting platform, I'll call it, that can incline 0 to 5 degrees. You can tilt it left or right mechanically. And then there's a laser projection that shows, according to the way that the, you almost have to see it in action, but according to the way the green is tilted, it shows the optimal line for the putt from any spot to the hole. And then it shows an aggressive line and a, you know, a safe line, so to speak. And I just thought, man, if you could be on that thing for 30 minutes a day, it would really help you learn how to read breaks, read putts, and you'd be practicing all these putts that you see on a course, because most putting mats that you go to are flat. And this right. one inclines, and the laser technology with the projection, I thought was really cool. It's $15,000, so Robbie, you and I are probably going to put it in our house.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, for a college program or even a high school program that would have the wherewithal to make a purchase like this, and there aren't too many that would, but you know, I'm convinced it would help you become a better putter, no doubt about it.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun was had down there at the, and I know just from, you know, monitoring social media, you ran into a lot of people from Wisconsin that were down there. Obviously, you know, a lot of the clubs, you know, use that to kind of harvest their goods for the year, and on we go. I guess the good news is, Gary, that it is another sign that we're one step closer to the start of the golf season.
It is. You know, there's so much excitement there because guys are, PGA professionals are, a lot of them are buying for their golf shops, and there's just a buzz in the air because, you know, golf is right around the corner. We're into the tournament season now on the PGA Tour. And I know you've got a lot of talk about concerning that, Rob, because you were at a couple tournaments the last couple of weeks. But yeah, it's a lot of excitement at the show because we know spring is hopefully around the corner.
Well, and you're right. The PGA Tour in full swing, and the Farmers Insurance Open provided a lot of excitement over the weekend. I got to follow Steve Stricker for another 36 holes. Unfortunately, a tough opening round, and he did not make the cut. But again, put new irons in the bag this week. Some, what was it? The Titleist T1000s, I believe he said they were. And you know, the 3-iron wasn't really producing the kind of shot that he needed to on, you know, to kind of change the karma that he was battling the previous week up in Palm Springs on with his you know, long iron game. And that put him behind the eight ball. And, you know, again, I think one of the discoveries, Gary, is the fact that, you know, Steve Stricker just does not drive it as long as he used to and as long as he needs to compete on the PGA Tour. But if he can find a way to, you know, to really, you know, get that long iron game in play and at least give himself putts at, you know, at birdie, he made a ton of them again. And, you know, and, or at least he gave him good looks. And I don't think it's out of the realm, but, Steve, very much, you know, still tinkering, and it's as early as he's ever started a season, and now he's added the Waste Management Phoenix Open to the schedule for this week. He may play 5 weeks in a row, Gary, and we have not seen that since 2005, if my glance through the PGA Tour records was correct. I think that says something about where Steve Stricker wants to get his game here in 2020.
Yeah, 5 weeks in a row, if he does it, Rob. Yeah, you're right. We haven't seen him do that in a long, long time. And is it because he wants to see the guys that are and be around the guys who are potential Ryder Cup players, or is it because he's working on his own game and sees some signs of progress and wants to keep going in that direction, or do you think it's a combination?
Well, it's a little bit of a combination, but I think it's mainly that he sees some things in his game, and he wants to compete, and he really wants to. You know, he's using this. The second of two career money list exemptions that he can use to play out here full time, and not have to, you know, Monday qualify, that kind of thing. And I think he thinks that he's, you know, and he's got some game left, which I think clearly he does based on his play in the Champions Tour last year in just a few spot starts. I don't think he's ready to go out there and just, you know, totally dominate when he knows that I think there are going to be certain courses that he'll play well at. I think it's just, you know, he's battling that elbow injury. I talked to his wife and caddy, Nikki, and, you know, she didn't think that he was close to 100% here, even at the start of last week. But he started to see some things in the second round on the North course and at Torrey Pines that he feels he can take in to Phoenix, a place that he really likes. Phoenix, he's opened his season there more often than he's opened it in California. And in fact, I believe this was the first time since the U.S. Open in 2008 that Steve Stricker had played at Torrey Pines, which I think says something. So I think he feels it's there. I think now with these new irons, he made a pit stop at Titleist up in Carlsbad and tried to get some new irons fitted. Like I said, the 3-iron didn't have the right results, so he may continue to tinker there. But otherwise, you know, he was pretty solid. And that was a tough course last week, Gary. Again, Torrey Pines South is going to host the U.S. Open next year, and the rough was up, and the rough was up on the North course, too. And then you had fog and moisture, so you weren't getting a whole lot of rollout. And I just think the combination made it tough for a guy like Steve Stricker. So we'll see. I'd be, you know, he has to play AT&T because he's paired with Toby Keith, and the main the headliner at last year's AmFam Friday concert. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him drop off the Genesis Invitational at Riviera. But then again, I think there's a lot of people who believe Riviera is the kind of course that Steve Stricker can play. So I think it'll be interesting to see how he progresses this week at Phoenix and whether the elbow continues to feel okay. And, if he gets, the vibes going again, especially, if he's able to make some magic happen on 16 at the greatest hole in on the PGA Tour, we'll see where he goes from there. But I honestly think he's close. And I think he'd like to, get a good finish or two under his belt here before the Florida swing. And, who knows what can happen.
Anyone else impress you in the field, Rob? And specifically the guys who are, we're starting to look at the Ryder Cup points now. I'm starting to pay attention to them every week. And I know you are too, and I know a lot of other people are. Was there anyone who impressed you, made a move up the Ryder Cup points list, or just just had a really good week that you were impressed with?
Yeah, I think what we'll probably start doing here is the Ryder Cup heat check, if you will. Brandon Snedeker was the guy that, in my book, had a great final round in the South course and moved up into a T3. He shot 72 on the South course on Saturday in the third round, which is kind of pedestrian. Otherwise, he might have, given Mark Leishman a run for the money. But I watched Snedeker for a few holes on Saturday. We went back down just to kind of, after Steve had missed the cut, just to kind of watch some of the other guys. And, he can still drive it straight. He can still drive it fairly long. He's a great putter. He's, very good around the greens. I just think he's one of those guys that doesn't go away. He might, history might make him the American version of Ian Poulter, that guy that just always hangs around in these team competitions. And I think he brings a lot to the team because of his experience, but right now he's outside of that top 10, so he's going to have a few more finishes like he did this week at Torrey Pines. Now Steve played the first two rounds at JB Holmes when JB shot 68-69 and was a shot or two off the lead, and of course JB Holmes is one of the tour's longest drivers, and Steve told me after the second round that just watching that, he thinks JB, if he could get hot, would be a wonderful addition to the team just because of the length that'll probably be involved in this setup at Whistling Straits. But there were a lot of American flags on that leaderboard in the top 10. You look at Tom Hoge, who apparently has Minnesota ties. Bubba Watson, Bubba, you're starting to round into form as we get closer to Augusta. Patrick Reed, another guy that whether you like him or not, he's always there. And, I think for Steve Stricker's sake, it would be good if Patrick Reed played his way on the team so he doesn't have to make that hard decision about whether to bring a guy who, is kind of polarizing to the golf community, into the mix for a captain's pick. But the way Patrick's playing, he might, put that to bed. But then you had Tony Finau, who's, been on some of these teams, And of course, Twitter sensation Max Homa, he finished 71-67, so he's right there. And you know, a lot of young guys that played well. A couple guys that I think this was the first time that Tiger Woods has been paired with someone in Colin Morikawa, who was born after Tiger Woods turned pro at the GMO in '96. So, you know, it just you know, all these little things, and these guys played pretty well in his company. So again, I think you know, you asked earlier if Steve might be looking at guys. You know, he could get double vision looking at this, at the leaderboards, trying to figure out who he should go watch, you know, yeah, who he should study at this stage in the season with this many guys playing this well.
You know, let me ask you one more Ryder Cup question, Rob. You know, we've heard the last couple of Ryder Cups, there's a lot of talk about the American Bombers and how guys like Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson and, you know, Gary Woodland, Tiger, Phil, all these guys hit it a mile, and how that's supposed to intimidate the Europeans. But it, you know, it still comes down to putting, which is why I really like a guy named like Brant Snedeker, because he's a great putter. He's got a great short game. And, yeah, it's good to have bombers, especially, I think, Whistling Straits, it'll probably be important. But, you know, America's had the bombers the last few Ryder Cups outside of maybe Rory McIlroy and one or two other guys. And Europe is superior because of the putting, I think. Don't you think it's important to – I mean, you want everything on your team, I guess. You want a well-rounded team, young and old, experienced. Couple rookies is fine with me. But I think – I think putting is the most important ingredient in a Ryder Cup. How do you feel about that?
I couldn't agree more, Gary. And I guess when the times that I've watched, you know, and you know, especially when you kind of, you know, bury yourself in your sofa and sit there and agonize on every hole, every, you know, every potential point that is up on the board. And, you know, I come away from almost every international team competition saying that the Europeans, especially, you know, obviously in the Ryder Cup, you know, make more putts that you don't expect to be made than the Americans. And I can't put my, you know, finger on it as to why that is. But, yes, you know, and again, I don't know if it has to do with, you know, all this, you know, attention being paid to, you know, how long, you know, guys are off the tee. But I agree. I think, putting is going to be a huge thing. You know, that's where, you know, you look at a guy like Webb Simpson maybe, and you know, then you know, again, there just aren't many guys known for their putting that are in that position to be on this team. And I think that's got to be a concern for Steve Stricker as he, you know, analyzes numbers later in the year and tries to figure out who do we need, what do we need to round out this team.
You're right, Rob, and I'll tell you what, if we, you know, you said you can't put your finger on it. If we could figure it out, we'd be in the team room at Whistling Straits helping those
exactly
guys.
Exactly.
So, nobody has those answers, and but hopefully Steve does as we get a little closer to the Ryder Cup here.
Because as you know, momentum's so key, and especially on home soil, you know, to get, you know, someone that can bury a 15 or 20 footer, and you know, when you least expect it, I think that would get the crowd charged up at Whistling Straits. So we'll see how things progress from there, how that team, and I think at some point here, Gary, we will have on one of our Talking.Golfs, maybe we'll do an initial, you know, draft of, you know, an American team and a European team. Who would we have as our top 12 on each side at, you know, before the Masters? I think we should do that, and then see how that changes as the four majors unfold.
Yeah, that'd be fun, Rob. Let's do that.
Well, and speaking of the Ryder Cup, I kind of stumbled in. I was looking, you know, I was also, you know, kind of mesmerized by the Tiger Woods, you know, following at Torrey Pines. You know, I think Doug Ferguson, the AP golf writer, tweeted that, you know, he hasn't seen a crowd this big on a Saturday following Tiger in over a decade. And you know, it was this week, actually this day, this Monday back in 2005, the PGA awarded Whistling Straits the two PGAs and the Ryder Cup. I can't believe it's been that long ago, Gary. And I just what a big event to have that happen. And for Whistling Straits to get those things. And now here we are. It doesn't seem like 15 years ago.
Boy, it sure doesn't, Rob. We talked about that a little bit before we started the podcast, and yeah, that you know, that was a coup for Polar Company to land three, you know, those additional PGA championships. I think the package was, the first one was such a success that they then signed the three championship deal, right? The two PGAs and Ryder Cup. Yeah. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen after the Ryder Cup up there, but I sure can't wait for these next 7 or 8 months to unfold here.
Well, and I guess as I look at it, you know, I remember thinking back then, you know, what was golf going to look like, you know, in 2020? Who would be the stars? And would the Tiger phenomenon still be there? I don't think any of us saw the ups and downs that he's had on and off the golf course, you know, over these, especially these last 5 or 10 years. But I think what stands out to me, Gary, is the fact that he's still there. He's still on the minds of golf fans. And it was like a major there this weekend at Torrey Pines with the way that he commanded a gallery. And it just so happened that I think he and Rory McIlroy, I know on Saturday they were back in back-to-back groups. And that was pretty cool. And then, of course, on Friday, he played with John Rahm. And, you know, of course, they've got a history in the Ryder Cup. So it just, it got me excited, Gary, for not only the four majors and all these other big events that are coming up, the Olympics, but, you know, obviously for the Ryder Cup, because, you know, it's pretty, you know, nobody gets too high or too low over how they play this time of year, but you know that it's going to change come September in Wisconsin when the Ryder Cup is on the line, and attitudes and again, the competitive juices will certainly be flowing at that point.
Yeah, no kidding, Rob. What a year we're going to have in Wisconsin here. What a slate of tournaments, you know, with the AmFam, with the Ryder Cup, and with, you know, our state championships being played on the premier courses in the state, with the state amateur at Milwaukee Country Club and the state open at Blue Mound. And we've got a junior Ryder Cup, and it's going to be a busy year, but it's going to be so much fun to see all these things.
Well, and I think, you know, the other thing that stands out is the fact that, again, this is what, the second year of the new schedule as well. And it'll be interesting to see how guys, you know, handle it with when you throw in an Olympics there in the middle of the summer, and ahead of the playoffs, after the British Open. You know, there's so much on these guys' plate. I mean, that's what's really going to, I think, set the table for Whistling Straits, is the fact that you've got so much more for these star players. And then, of course, you know, the big news to come out last week at Torrey Pines, Jeff Shackelford, had the story about this new tour that might make a run at some of the PGA Tour names, and I still, you know, don't follow, you know, quite how it's going to operate, who it might go after, but you know, we've seen this in many sports in the past, you know, where the establishment gets threatened by a new way of doing things, but right now with what we got on the calendar for 2020. These guys are going to be really challenged to keep their focus, to keep their energy, and you know, to perform at the high level they expect of themselves.
Yeah, you're right, Rob. A lot of people look at, who aren't familiar with golf all that much, might look at it and say, you know, what's so hard about what those guys do? They, you know, they play golf, they play 4 days, you know, they play in a few pro-ams, and it's you know, they've got a great life, and what could be so difficult about it? But you know, there's pressure on those guys, and a different kind of pressure maybe than in other sports, but they are independent contractors. They're in charge of their schedules and their lives, and they have to make those decisions. And people don't realize how much travel, what that can do to you as far as getting ready for tournaments. And, you know, you try swinging 118 miles an hour, you know, four, five, 6 days in a row, and do it week after week. And we see it with the injuries that crop up in these guys. So it's a compacted schedule, and it's tougher than I think the layman out there realizes or understands.
It was exhausting for me, Gary, just to follow along for 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing we have now that we didn't have back when we used to cover the GMO, my friend, is the step counters on our phones. Yeah. And we didn't have phones in our pockets back when we covered the GMO, for that matter. But, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's a grind. And then, you know, they had a 2-hour fog delay on Saturday, and at this time of year, it feels like you're at the golf course, you know, from sunup to sundown, because the days are so much shorter than they are here after daylight savings. But you know, it is a grind. And then, you know, and with this potential for a new tour, I mean, it's supply and demand. And I forgot what the number was on the number of people trying to qualify and pre-qualify for this week's Waste Management, but you know, we're talking 500-600 guys in the pre-qual just to get in the Monday qualifier for three spots, not even four spots at this thing, because they, you know, they limit it at this time of the year for a single course full field event. And I mean, there are a lot of guys trying to play professional golf, aren't there?
Yeah, there sure are. And the PGA Tour has faced some uprisings and some people who have tried to start other tours. Of course, the most famous example might be Greg Norman, who wanted to launch sort of a world tour, and you know, which morphed into the World Golf Championships, which, of course, he was sort of frozen out of that, and he's still bitter about it, which is one reason he doesn't play the Champions Tour. But yeah, there's it'll be interesting to see where this goes. There sure are a lot of golfers out there, but in order for any tour to be successful, they'd have to have some names.
They sure would. So we'll see where that goes. As it relates to golf this week, Gary, again, Steve Stricker playing at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, and you know, the greatest show on grass. I said inadvertently turf. Somebody else has that patented. It's the greatest show on grass, and it begins Thursday at the TPC Scottsdale, and they have not yet posted tee times for that one. The PGA Tour Champions has a new event on the calendar this year, and it's in Morocco, and it is the Morocco Champions event. They're calling it the Morocco Champions, very simple, and Jerry Kelly will be in that field, and a chance for Jerry after a solid showing over in Hawaii to follow that up. And last but not least, the Korn Ferry Tour gets going again down at Panama at the Golf Club de Panama. And I believe that's a Mexican or Panamanian for Panama Golf Club. And
very good.
Very good, huh? Oh, you like
yeah,
that, huh?
Pretty good. Good translation.
Don't ask me what this what the soup du jour is, though. I have no idea what that is. But I anticipate they haven't posted a field for that. But I anticipate Dan Woltman, Jordan Niebergi will be down there, and actually Jordan Hahn came close to qualifying for a couple of these events down there. Shot a pair of 68s and missed, I believe, for this one and the previous week's tournament down there. And there's another leg of the PGA Tour Latin America Tour qualifying down in Argentina. CJ Swift, of the former Marquette golfer, missed out in the Florida leg of the qualifying a couple weeks ago. Again, we're starting to get going with that. We'll have Canadian Tour qualifying before long. And before long, Gary, it'll be time for some golf shows to start up, too. I think we've got a couple that'll be getting going in the upper Midwest. That's another sign that spring's on its way.
You're coming home for the Chicago Golf Show, correct, Rob?
I am, yep. Looking forward to that at the end. It's a late start this year because of the way the calendar rolls. So it'll be and I guess because of leap year, too, will be the we get the Chicago Golf Show on leap day. And then it closes on March 1st. So it feels a week later, but always that last weekend of the month there in February. And again, a chance for a lot of the golf courses to show their wares. I'm guessing, Gary, one that we won't see there that we've seen the last 3 or 4 years that we've been there, the Bullet Pinehurst Farms, to kind of tease some coverage on Wisconsin.golf for tomorrow. Dennis McCann will be in Sheboygan Falls. Or Sheboygan, I guess, for the sheriff's auction for the Bullet Pinehurst Farms. And we've talked about this before on the show, and I'm sure people have read about what's happened over there. The future of that course probably lies in who steps up and shows a willingness to take on the debt of the course and have a vision for keeping it going. We've talked about it before, Gary. I don't think anybody whether you, me, or anyone listening wants to see that course leave the landscape here in Wisconsin.
No, it's been a great addition to the rotation of great golf courses in our state. And of course, you know, it's held some of the state's most prestigious events, the state amateur. And we'd hate to see it go away as a golf course. I don't think it will. I mean, we were speculating earlier today, Rob, you were in on this phone conversation, that the bank, looks like the bank likely will own the golf course. But if that's the case, we would think they would want to keep it up as a golf course to be able to sell it, because you just can't let that grass grow and then you've got nothing. So hopefully whoever owns it, hopefully can keep that course going, because it's been a treasure. It's been a great golf course in Wisconsin for about 20 some years now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sad. I mean, we're seeing too many courses close. You know, I've been going through our directories as we get ready to put the Wisconsin.golf yearbook to bed. And, you know, there's, you know, a few more courses that have closed that I didn't realize, you know, were no longer around. Argument Golf Course, a little nine-holer down north of New Glarus that opened when I was still at the State Journal. And just a mom-and-pop operation. And, you know, they, I believe they had the fescue fairways, you know, because they wanted to, ease of maintenance kind of a la, you know, the way Whistling Straits opened. And they are closed. And again, it's hard. It's hard to keep you know, golf afloat in today's world. And so we don't want to see another one go, especially one of the quality of the bull. But we shall see. We've got other things going on this week too, Gary. You've got stories coming up. Another couple stories off the golf show, and then another one about pickleball. What are you writing about pickleball for?
I know. Yeah, our good friend Sherry Steinhauer, Rob, as you know, has transitioned from golf into pickleball. She's very serious about it. She's a really good player, apparently, has won national championships. I'm not sure if that's an age group thing or what it is, but we're gonna talk to Sherry this week, and she's actually signed an endorsement contract with a pickleball apparel and equipment company. So she's repping a company as a professional pickleball player and hasn't probably touched her clubs, I'm guessing, in a long time. But she had to find something for her competitive outlet, and she's found pickleball. She's apparently a very, very good player. So we'll be talking to Sherry and doing a story on her transition from a great golf career into what is a budding, it looks like, exceptional pickleball career.
Well, you tell Sherry, Gary, that you and I are getting to that age where we might need to start transitioning to pickleball ourselves. So if she can get us any of those rackets, we'll be. We're not ashamed. We all to put our hand out. So
especially if she can
put us, you know, the titlest of pickleball rackets in our hands. How can you go wrong?
How can you go wrong? We'd spray it all over the place, I'm sure, Rob.
That's right. On a serious note, I mean, my college roommates are in a place over outside of Phoenix in a retirement community, and they love pickleball, and apparently it's the rage of the entire community, and I think it is to the older generation what lacrosse has become to the younger generation. It's something new, it's something trendy, and most importantly, it's something fun. And I think that's what's you know, it's giving Sherry the opportunity to not only enjoy yourself doing something, but be competitive at it. So we're looking forward to that one. And I think you've got something coming up on Sean Toulon, the guru of putters. Is that right?
Yeah, Rob. Yeah, I ran into Sean Toulon from a Madison guy at the golf shows. He's with Callaway now. Of course, I think a lot of our listeners know his background. He's, you know, been in the equipment business forever, worked for TaylorMade for 16 years designing clubs. And as you know, Rob started his own putter company, and his product was so good that the Callaway bought him out but kept him because his putter designs were so good. And now he's sort of overseeing the Callaway line of Odyssey putters and all their putters. And so we're going to catch up. I'm doing a little catch-up story with Sean. What's he up to these days? And him talking about the Callaway products.
And Dennis McCann also later this week with a story on the fate of the golf course known as the Creeks at Ivy Acres in Hortonville. It closed in July after some tornado damage struck the course and never reopened. And the owner's been battling the insurance company to get money to kind of repair the course. And apparently it's 50-50 as to whether it'll reopen. You can read more about that Thursday on Wisconsin.golf. And, of course, one other item we should mention too, Mike Davis, who's been helping us out, your former colleague from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who's been doing a lot of great stuff behind the scenes for us here at Wisconsin.golf, has finally gotten our Talking.golf podcast in on the verge of getting in the Apple iTunes store, and soon it will be available on iTunes as well as other podcast apps. So keep looking and searching for Talking.golf, and you'll be able to listen to, for better or worse, I guess, Gary, you and me as you're on your treadmill at the gym, I guess. Some people might do that, maybe.
Rob, I can picture Tiger Woods driving down I-4 in Florida tuning into our podcast. So.
Tiger, yes. Well, if that's what it takes to get Tiger's attention, then hey, we need to put Mike Davis in for a raise. So
for sure.
But we'll see if we get any feedback from the great Tiger Woods. But Gary, it's been quite a week, and looking forward to another great week this week, and we'll talk again next week on Talking.Golf.
All right, Rob, that sounds good. Thanks.
All right, for Gary D'Amato, I'm Rob Hernandez. We appreciate you listening to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf.